Good evening and welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Tonight we're going to be discussing trauma, and I invite our listeners to call in with any comments or questions you might have. As our guests tonight, we have Dr. Dudley Tuning, a licensed counselor, marriage and family therapist, and director of the PTSD and TBI Counseling Center of Northwest Louisiana. We also have the director of juvenile services for Caddo Parish, Mr. Clay Walker. Welcome, guests. Thank you for being here this evening. I'm going to start with you, Dr. Tuning. Would you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes. Most of my time, my occupation, I was in the Air Force, combat pilot, and then moved out of the Air Force, went back and got some more degrees to focus on marriage and family. In the past several years, I've been focusing on trauma. PTSD is the acronym for post-traumatic stress disorder. Trauma memory might be a newer word that we're using. So most of my clients now are those that have had trauma in the past or have had trauma recently, and they're dealing with it and all the problems that it creates. So we usually see male, female, children from age 7 up to adults, work with couples, work with families, which just about covers everyone that I know.
And Mr. Walker, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I work at juvenile court. There at the north end of Urie Drive, we have a 24-bed detention center, and we have a probation staff. At any given time, roughly 350, 400 kids in Caddo Parish that are on probation. And so I oversee the 80 staff members that run juvenile court.
So I want to first start by just talking about some of the behavioral problems that we see in children and in adults when they have experienced a trauma.
All right. Usually what people see, the first thing that they will see is they go into a state of depression, and sometimes they'll be treated for depression, but the underlying problem would be trauma. Some other things that you may see will be anxiety, panic attacks, and things like that. The root cause of most of those would be trauma memory also. Then you have the classical PTSD, which is basically dealing with trauma memory, which means you've had the trauma event, then later on in life something kicks something off inside the brain, and then we migrate into post-traumatic stress disorder.
And Mr. Walker, we have you here because in your work you see a lot of trauma, and actually you're doing some things to help address. Would you talk a little bit about what it is that that Juvenile Services is doing to help address some of these issues?
Sure. We unfortunately see it in adults and kids. I mean, it's all part of a cycle of abuse. And so in the what we call the in need of care cases, abuse and neglect, you have children that have been abused. The parents in those cases often have a history of being abused themselves in that cycle. And all of that is trauma. Trauma to the parents when they were abused, trauma now to the kids as they're abused. As those kids grow up, we see them manifest that trauma. And a lot of times, I mean, frankly, what it looks like, unfortunately, is it comes out as anger. I call it justifiable anger. They've been abused for much of their life, but that's how it's manifested. And it's impacting the school system. It's impacting law enforcement. It's impacting some safety in the community. And we need to address those safety issues, but underlying it is that trauma. And so that's what we're trying to do is deal on the one hand with the behavior and public safety, but then really get to the trauma so that we can heal that underlying the cause of it if we can.
Sure, because we can teach these children and even adults anger management skills and things like that, but if we don't resolve that root problem, then these behaviors are going to continue and problems are going to continue.
Yes, and unfortunately, I mean, just it continues the cycle. So then we have kids that are then growing up, and unfortunately, at young ages, having kids themselves, and that cycle continues. So we're trying to reach the adults and get to their trauma from their past, Obviously, the kids is a little more recent, but we're needing to deal with their behavior, their misconduct in school, for example, but then get to that underlying trauma, hopefully heal it, get both parent and child back on the right path, and for public safety, I mean, that reduces our recidivism. You don't have a revolving door. But for those individuals, hopefully getting some healing, some peace of mind, because that's been a long history of trauma.
One of the things, Shelley, that we're looking at when it comes to trauma, we need to begin to think that trauma at the early ages is not working up into the frontal cortex, because the mind has not developed and advanced that much. So what we're seeing is your trauma is kind of stored and reacting in the base of the brain. So when the person grows up or you become an adult, the mind may not really fully understand trauma. It's the base of the brain kicking off adrenaline and other hormones. Then the body reacts it. Then the mind gets flooded with hormones. Then the mind begins to think differently. So part of our problem is diagnosing the trauma correctly so that we can put the best intervention in there for the particular form of trauma that we see. So we're learning that. In the past 4 or 5 years, we've gained a lot of insight into handling trauma, mainly because the military comes back and they reported the PTSD, and that became vogue. And the more we study trauma and the more we study PTSD, we begin to understand sometimes it's just best to understand that it's inside the body and not necessarily up in the frontal cortex where we can talk and remember it so well.
So correct me if I'm wrong. So what you're saying is what's happening with these memories is that they are really going more toward the primitive part of the brain, which impacts some of the physiological functioning.
Absolutely. Those little control centers in the base of the brain will kick off that flight or fight, which is a common word we hear. That's where the person becomes aggressive and acts out a lot, or it throws another switch and it moves over to the immobilization state, where people withdraw, become isolated, don't want to interact with other people. So it is kind of a base of the brain, or the primitive part of our brain, but that's what we have to have to survive sometimes in the beginning, and the brain takes care of the young child in the beginning sometimes.
And it's been a little while since I've been out of school, but I know that, you know, we were kind of taught, you talk about it some more, and then talk about it again. And what you're saying is that that's not necessarily the case.
Actually, it's one of the worst things we can do. We've found out for some particular forms of trauma, such as relationship trauma, multiple traumas, or youth trauma, what we call that developmental trauma disorder. If we go in there and begin to talk, the brain can't figure it out. So then the brain reacts, kicks off the adrenaline, kicks off all these trauma memories. Then we have the frontal cortex gets flooded with hormones, and it kind of shuts down and gets foggy. So they really can't articulate what they need to. But if they do articulate and talk more, then it shoots off more adrenaline, more stress, then you have more problems.
So as we're learning more how this is affecting our bodies physiologically, we're also learning that some of the treatment techniques that we used to use perhaps are not very effective and, in fact, could be harmful.
Yes, that's unfortunate. And as we come out of school, probably 10 years ago, our knowledge is a little antique right now. We have to learn that the old forms of trauma memory intervention actually work against us, and we have to move into different techniques, different interventions compared to the old talk therapies that just don't work. In fact, unfortunately, they make it worse, and we just got to get that word out.
Yeah, I know. I was trained, you know, you do critical incident debriefings and you talk about it and that sort of thing, but we're really having to change our way of thinking about trauma and treatment of trauma.
Yes, unfortunately, that's true, and we got to get the word out, and institutions have to understand that, and that you don't want to necessarily get too much talk too soon to people that have been traumatized. Most of them are in the shock stage anyway, and they're not really going to recall what they need to, and if you talk to them too much too soon, you're just making it worse on them.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8255. 8502. So early intervention is important. Would y'all mind speaking about that, about early intervention and the need for that?
Yeah, early intervention, let's say for an adult that has had a single event, trauma event, it could be a disaster, it could be almost loss of life, it could be witnessing stuff like that. That produces, we'll call PTSD or trauma memory. So that's sitting in the brain, and you may have immediate behavior from that, but there are other two cases where it sits in the brain and it goes dormant. But down the road, something's going to trigger that trauma memory. Then all of a sudden, your behavior is going to change because you're reacting to adrenaline and all the other hormones that are kicked off from that trauma memory. So you can have what we call delayed reaction. It just shows up later on in life. Or two, you can recognize that you have trauma. You just don't know what it is. Your behavior is there. Then the longer you wait for treatment, the worse it is for you, because the chemical will secrete some inflammatory hormones, and they get into the brain, and they have the ability to cause the small blood vessels to swell, which then means you can get brain atrophy the longer you wait to get your treatment. So the best advice is, if you think you have something like PTSD or trauma reaction, trauma memory reaction, is to seek appropriate care so that we don't have bigger problems down the road.
And Mr. Walker, what y'all are trying to do is really intervene so that these cycles don't continue, correct?
Right. What we're trying to do is work with partners like the school system, law enforcement, certainly the probation officers and detention staff at juvenile court. We're talking about trying to get training to all these folks to recognize the trauma. Hopefully for us, I mean, if it's unfortunately kids that are younger ages, I would rather have a teacher identify that in a 7-year-old and get that 7-year-old referred for treatment, rather than that 7-year-old manifests that trauma in misbehavior in school from the age of 7 to 14, and then they come see me in juvenile court at 14. We've got 7 years of lost treatment. We've got 7 years of misconduct and disruption in schools. And now a 14-year-old that's, 100 pounds heavier, still angry, causing trouble, is more of a trouble in the community than the 7-year-old. We've got a better chance to heal them at 7. But we've also, the 14-year-old, just in the same way that other teenagers now, hormones are kicking in and influence of other teenagers, it's just all more difficult the later you wait. So if we can get that training to the school system and to law enforcement, to the medical community, to make those earlier referrals, younger referrals. Sometimes you're literally stopping the abuse that's taking place, but if it was an earlier abuse that happened, you're at least getting that treatment to the kids sooner.
So that early identification and early intervention is important for both neurobiological reasons, but also for the behavioral reasons.
Right, Shelley. One of the things that we're seeing is one of the big researchers in trauma and trauma memory and PTSD is saying that probably 34 of the disorders that we see in children probably have a root cause from trauma. So a lot of your ADHD and oppositional defiance and things like that probably have a root cause of trauma. So if you're just medicating or treating ADHD and you don't find the trauma, then we're putting medicine in the wrong place and we're not helping the children out right.
And I want to invite our listeners again to join our conversation. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So when we think of trauma, we usually think of PTSD, but there are different types of traumas and PTSD. Would y'all mind talking about that?
Yeah, there are different forms of, I'm going to call it trauma memory. That seems to be the best for me right now. You have the single event trauma. That's one form of trauma. You can certainly have multiple trauma events, so that's the different form. You can have delayed reaction, and then you can have also delayed treatment. They cause different issues when it comes to trauma. The big trauma, or the trauma that's the most difficult for everyone to handle, are now under a new title called complex trauma. complex trauma has probably three categories inside of it. It would be the youth trauma, which is developmental trauma disorder, or DTD. Then you also have relationship trauma. That becomes complex trauma. Then the more adult trauma events or multiple trauma events that we have also get moved into the category of complex trauma. And complex trauma has to be treated different than a single event trauma and all the little forms that come with single events. So we have to get smarter and do our diagnosing right so that we treat complex trauma, which is pretty difficult to diagnose and treat appropriately right now, and we're trying our best to get better at it.
So it sounds like it's really important to make sure that you go to a professional who is experienced and trained in trauma and really understands some of the newer research and techniques.
Yes, that's almost absolute, because sometimes we're working with children and we don't see the trauma there. And then some people will medicate, and sometimes there is a need for medication, but if we don't identify that trauma and don't filter out the trauma and work the trauma, and we're medicating something like ADHD only, we're just missing the boat. And then you got a child on medication that's not really benefiting them.
And Mr. Walker, what kind of traumas do y'all see, or does it kind of run the gamut as to what kind of things y'all are trying to intervene on?
Unfortunately, probably the primary that we see is a history of sexual abuse. In abuse and neglect cases, it's gotten to the point with the adults that we're no longer really even talking about the high percentages. We simply use the term that it's a universal, that it's something that nearly all of the adults in the abuse and neglect system have suffered. We also see a fair amount of physical abuse. We see severe neglect in infancy. All of those. We see a fair amount of witnessing domestic violence as a trauma, which not only is a trauma in itself and witnessing, but then there's also kind of layered on top of that socially the role model that they're watching be abusive causes a lot of trouble. So those are our primary: sexual abuse, physical abuse, and domestic violence.
Some other things that are kicking off a trauma memory for our folks too will be those people that have witnessed or been involved in a natural disorder, those children that have witnessed a school shooting and things like that, they're traumatized. People that have basically been abused or neglected are the ones we usually recognize with trauma, but we do have some bullying that goes on, and bullying has also the ability to traumatize people, and then that causes the trauma memory, and then we're all in the same boat working on complex trauma again.
Sure, it's not just veterans who experience trauma. I mean, certainly veterans do experience trauma. However, there are many different types of incidences that can cause trauma.
Yeah, and it's easy to recognize probably when you have rape victims, you know, non-military people, just civilians, and you're dealing with rape there, that usually has the potential to move into trauma memory. Kids that have been actually starved and neglected that way, that can move quickly into childhood trauma. Beatings by fathers on kids, excessive punishment, which is too tough on kids sometimes, that migrates quickly into complex trauma. So male, female, all of the cultures, all of the races, all of the ages are susceptible. And right now the researchers are broadcasting that we suspect 25% of our children are probably abused, and we need to do something about that immediately, or that number grows as the generations continue on.
Sure. Yeah, because we're not addressing the core problem, and then that cycle just continues through the next generation and the next generation.
Right. Then it spreads out in families and to different generations and multiples of family. You could say the root cause was three or four generations ago.
Sure.
And we still haven't got anything corrected. So what we're looking at is a lot of the families with heavy dysfunction. Obviously, trauma plays a big part in dysfunction. Abuse plays a part in dysfunction. So if parents are and families are dysfunctional, that's just ripe grounds for trauma to grow, because usually it gets worse as the families, when they are dysfunctional, they usually return to punishment, beatings, starving, abuse, neglect, and it just gets worse with time, unfortunately.
And Mr. Walker, I know that y'all are trying to address some of that, not just the juveniles who are having issues, but some of that family dysfunction that's more, you know, spread through the family. Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Sure. What we do, what we're aiming to do is if we find an underlying problem, we try to address that. And so we've created, for example, a juvenile drug court. If addiction is the issue, we have a juvenile mental health court if there are more serious mental health problems. We've had to form, unfortunately, a specialized probation unit for human trafficking. Two probation officers whose caseloads are victims of human trafficking. And so that population, for example, has almost a universal history of trauma, history of sexual abuse and rape. So we create those specialized units in the specialized courts. The staff get specialized training. We need to be able to identify that. There's a lot that we need to avoid. We need to not say the wrong things. We need to not to judge some of those things, to push the kids away. But then we also need to find in the community resources for treatment. And so don't mean to make it sound too simple, but that's it. If we can identify it and find that resource, we make that referral, and folks like Dr. Tuning, you know, do the healing. We get the kids to those services. You'll often find, I mean, as we've been talking about, just the cycle of it. Several adults in the home also had that similar history, and so we can make referrals for the whole family. It's called wraparound services, and basically everyone in the home, if they would benefit from counseling, from treatment, from job placement, anything we can do to get the whole house back on track and make it a healthier place for the kid. That's the goal in terms of public safety. You know, it ultimately comes down to recidivism. But behind that recidivism number is a lot of work to get that family treated.
Sure.
One thing that Clay Walker just brought up, turned the light on in my brain, a lot of the addiction treatment that we've been doing and a lot of the depression treatment we've been doing, we have begun to realize that a lot of your addiction issues are set off by trauma. And if we go into addiction counseling only, we're curing, say, alcohol addiction, and it migrates to drug addiction or another addiction down the road. And that's because we haven't come back and diagnosed it completely and found that trauma sets up addiction and sets up depression. So all of us that treat those particular disorders are going to have to really start thinking about trauma and diagnosing it, treating the trauma, as well as treating the addiction and or the depression to get the person totally healed.
Sure, because we often see that people are just trying to self-medicate those symptoms. And so sometimes, you know, that's where the addiction comes into play, is just that need to try to help ameliorate those symptoms. And that's the, you know, way that they found to do that, at least in the short term.
Yeah, so the grab thing. Things like alcohol do have the tendency to make the person think they are numbing the pain, which they are in a way numbing the pain, but the pain's still there and the pain's going to come back after the alcohol is dissipated. And then those self-medications, inappropriate medications, we would say, give you a little sense of everything's okay, but actually they also will make it worse also. And until we get in there, diagnose that trauma and treat that trauma, those addiction cycles, I think, are just going to continue on and on for those people that have trauma memory.
Sure. Yeah, because I'll often have people say, well, but it helps me sleep, it helps me feel more relaxed, and that very well may be the case in the short term, but it's not really, it's often exacerbating the underlying problems in the long term.
Unfortunately, you're right.
Yeah. I want to invite our listeners to call in with a question or comment. Our number is 1-800-552-5555. 8502. So we were talking, I want to talk a little bit more about the family dysfunction. Dr. Tuning, would you talk, you and I had talked earlier about the fact that, you know, just treating the child isn't enough, that really need to treat the system. Would you mind speaking a little more about that?
Yes, what we see, and it's very easy to see, is that you have chaos, or we'll call it dysfunctioning families, and you have to treat that family. You'll find the abuse in the children, and you go out and treat the child for trauma and stuff like that, and you move them back into the chaotic or dysfunctional family, that child will migrate back into trauma again. So it's very important for those people that are doing trauma work with children is to get the family in there and see the functionality there to get it back up to some level that we feel safe in moving those kids back in there, so that the kid is not recontaminated by a chaotic dysfunctional family, which sets off the abuse, which then traumatizes the children. So it's very, very important, and it only makes sense as we got to get those families functional so that they can produce and grow functional kids. And most dysfunctional families can't do that right now too well.
Sure. I know that you had talked a little bit about complex trauma and then PTSD and so forth. Would you mind going over that one more time, just kind of describing how you differentiate those different types of trauma?
Okay, yeah. Complex trauma is a word that means this is the toughest trauma form. And what we have is three categories inside complex trauma. The one would be if you have multiple trauma when you're an adult, which means your foundation is weakened, and the more trauma you have, the foundation even gets weaker. So more trauma on top of trauma is really, really a bad thing. So that moves into complex trauma. And if you have trauma that's inside a relationship, abusive relationship, or things like rape, that's called a relationship trauma. That also is in the category of a complex trauma. Then childhood trauma, anywhere in your developmental years, if that occurs, we also see that as complex trauma. So the word complex to us means it's just more difficult. It's got more things into it. It may be relationship. And as you see coming out of families and you're traumatized by the family, it's not just one person you got to work. You have to work the whole family, which means you have to work the whole system to get it well so that the individuals remain well and get over their trauma. So complex is just kind of a newer word, which actually means it's just blasted complex on how you sort it out and how you treat it. And it's just not like the single military PTSD event that occurs one time with one person. And PTSD is also a civilian trauma. The military just made it popular, but people can certainly get traumatized from a car wreck, an accident. The body actually goes into trauma when we have heavy operations. So if you have a big operation on the body's traumatized, and that body's going to remember it, and certain nerves and the brain are going to communicate trauma, and certain parts of the body seem to remain sensitive over time just because of some big operations, which makes sense that we can traumatize the mind and we can traumatize the body. So complex just means it's a little harder to work, and it takes a little longer to pull people out of that complex trauma memory.
So what might a family member or a teacher notice or see if someone had a complex trauma? And would that be different than PTSD, or would it be the same?
Well, it'd be different. If you see trauma memory, that's probably a better word to use, you're going to see typically two types of behavior. The aggressive behavior is that flight or fight when adrenaline moves into the muscles and it moves into the brain. People become aggressive. They fight. There's anger there. They want to retaliate. They want to do something, and they want to tear up something. So we call that an acronym. We'll just call that the lion side of the trauma. But if you cannot flee or fight, you cannot fight because you're subdued or there's a big hierarchy problem in front of you, most people migrate to the immobilization state, and that's probably where 80% of the trauma people are right now. They're in the withdrawal mode. They avoid engagement with people. They avoid big groups and crowds. They don't like to go to the big shopping arenas and things like that, because people create anxiety in them. Then that anxiety increases that adrenaline flow. Then all of a sudden they're overwhelmed with emotion. So that's kind of how that is right now.
And Mr. Walker, I know that what y'all are trying to do is, just as Dr. Tuning said, some of the anger, the aggression that might bring a child to the attention of the court system or a probation officer or something, that y'all are trying to address those things early so that the child doesn't get stuck in the system. Is that correct?
It is. I mean, what we actually try to do, we have found that you have to address first with the family food insecurity, housing insecurity, financial insecurities. We've got to deal with some stabilization in the home. We're dealing, unfortunately, primarily with single moms. If there's food shortage or housing problems, she's really not in a place, at least what we're finding, where she's not in a place where she can heal. She can't deal with those past traumas if she's dealing with an immediate emergency. So we deal with a lot of that stabilization up front. We're trying to stabilize the home and get everybody in a place where they can receive that treatment. But then we make those referrals. Hopefully by then we've been able to uncover a little bit the history, some of the trauma for the mother, for the family, for other adults in the home or for the children, and get them referred.
So if we ourselves suspect that we have experienced a trauma and we're experiencing some of these symptoms, what should we do?
Well, if you can, and you can get support of some other family member, and y'all can seek out treatment, then you would want to find someone that has the experience in treating trauma families. And a lot of supervisors, they can get wear and tear and stress also. But supervisors, teachers, those people that have been around kids long enough, they probably got a pretty good hunch that something's not right with this particular child. So if they bring it to the attention of the school counselors, then the school counselors may be able to bring it to the attention of the parents. So the bottom line is, we want to find out, is the child traumatized? And once we find that out, we have to hurry up and seek treatment so that his behavior and his trauma memory doesn't interfere with his academic growth and cause him to get behind there. So teachers, people that are street smart and can recognize unusual behavior, even if it looks like ADHD or something like that, it's worth finding someone that can diagnose trauma and help get the help on the way to do the trauma memory work, the filtering of the trauma, and get the person restabilized.
Yeah, because when a child is in crisis, a lot of their symptoms can mimic some other disorders. So we have to be really careful as far as making sure that we're diagnosing the right thing, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And even as therapists, sometimes we're so used to someone saying, well, this person, my son is ADHD. Well, it could be ADHD, but the therapist has to come in there and do some diagnosis and begin to look at trauma. And if they do find trauma there, we got to treat that trauma, or that ADHD is just probably going to be masked by medication, unfortunately, sometimes. And you can make a child a little better for a little while, but if you don't go back in there and find that trauma and treat that trauma, it's just tough getting that child well again.
Would you mind, Dr. Tuning, talking a little more about the neurobiology and how all of that works within the body and the brain and so forth?
I wish I could. I'm not a medical person, so I'll give you the layman's definition
That'll work.
And basically what happens when a child's in the womb, you have the brain stem. You don't have much frontal cortex at all. And certainly a baby in utero can have the stress hormones that are kicked off from the mother if the mother's under stress. So stress can come about early in life, And then as you're born, the brain has certain defensive things that it's going to do automatically no matter what you think or what you do. In other words, if you're tired, sleepy, or hungry, the baby's going to cry. Well, that's kind of the autonomic nervous system kicking off and saying, hey, this kid needs something or I need something. So the body and the base of the brain has these defensive reactions built into it. That's just the way we come programmed. So if a child senses fear, and a baby can sense fear through frequency, a frequency that's way too high or a frequency that's way too low or a particular smell, the brain will recognize that, and the child doesn't even have to think, or some adults don't even have to think, then that creates a trauma, and that trauma, which would be the flight or fight mode, is trying to get that particular person away from the emergency or the trauma. So if we think we're going to get killed, we want to run and hide and get away from it, and that preserves life. So the brain has an automatic function to save our life. But if we can't do that flight or fight, the brain says, all right, it's time to shut down, it's time to get away from people, it's time to hide. It's time to lower your breathing rate. It's time to lower your heart rate. You need to sit down, rest, and kind of crawl into your shell like a turtle. And so the brain does this automatically. It's not necessarily a thought process. And we think it is a thought process. And when we just treat it as a pure thought process, we're missing the boat, because the base of the brain can take charge of the frontal cortex. And it does that by kicking out adrenaline. And once the adrenaline flows into the frontal cortex, your mind thinking is just totally different. You're in a state of shock. You're reacting to things. You're not thinking well. You can't prepare and do good thought. You're just acting on reflexes. And the base of the brain is controlling all those reflexes for us.
And when you say the frontal cortex, you're talking about that area of executive functioning, really the higher thinking, and then the yeah. Other that is more of the primitive brain that controls that basic.
Yeah, the primitive brain controls the reflexes. That makes sense. That's when you're born, you have automatic reflex control. And as you grow, you develop your frontal cortex, your thinking, your mathematics skills, your reading skills, your writing skills, and those things come with the frontal cortex. And you're just not really born with much of that. And that makes sense. So, and you don't need to do a lot of thinking when you're young. Your autonomic nervous system is just going to take care of your needs for you. That's why babies cry, and that's why mamas come running to them. They hear that frequency of a baby crying, and the mother responds to the frequency. And all people sometimes will respond to a baby crying, no matter who we are. Once we hear that crying frequency, we pay attention to it. So the primitive brain, or the base of the brain, the brain stem, really controls the autonomic nervous system. That's our breathing, our heart rate, heart beating, and stuff like that. A heart beats all by itself, and we don't tell it to beat at night. If we went to sleep and we had to tell our heart to beat, we wouldn't live too long. So the base of the brain just takes care of us, and we just need to pay attention to that, because it's trying to keep us alive, trying to keep us out of danger and out of the threat. And so some people call it the primitive brain, or the brain stem, or the defensive control. But that autonomic nervous system activates us, or it shuts us down. And it's an automatic reflex. It's not a thinking process.
And so in the past, we've been trying to treat trauma more in the frontal part of the brain, and really where we need to focus is more of the back part of the brain.
Well, yeah, the base of the brain, and a lot of the Eastern treatments like yoga and some of the martial arts programs have a tendency to allow the individual to think what part of the body is doing what, and we have to work on that, because some of this memory will be placed in muscle memory. It'll be placed in joints and things like that, and those things become sensitive to certain things because they've been traumatized. Just kind of like a bone in the leg, the more you stress it, the more you get stress fractures. And it can stress a little, and it can get some stress fractures, but once you go just a hair too far, then you have a broken bone. And the mind kind of gets like that. You can stress the mind out to a certain point, but once you pass a certain point, the brain loses its control, and all kind of other things could happen, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And so, Mr. Walker, y'all are trying to use the new research, the new scientific findings to really inform how you deliver services and what exactly, how you're approaching problems. Is that correct?
Yes. So what this looks like for us is that we would have, for example, a 9-year-old girl that's at her home at night and unfortunately is abused by some adult in that home. And it creates a trauma trigger. So if she's in her bed at night and the abuser opens the hallway door and a bright light from the hallway gets in her eyes, and then he unfortunately abuses her. If that happens, you know, for 4 years of her childhood, she's now a 12-year-old girl in one of our local schools, and the teacher turns off the lights to do a PowerPoint, you know, goes through that PowerPoint about math or science or whatever, and then flips the light back on. That light coming back on is the trauma trigger for her. And so you've got a teacher who's simply done a PowerPoint and is unaware of the trigger, turns the light back on. The girl, as Dr. Tuning said, is now having basically a fight or flight response in that classroom. Unfortunately, if any kind of interaction, you know, if there's a slight noise in the back of the classroom, the teacher says, "Hey guys, settle down back there." And then all of a sudden this girl flips out, turns over her desk, cusses at people, storms out of the classroom. It looks like anger. It looks like explosive anger. It looks like an anger management problem. And historically, that's how it would be treated, is that she's taken for anger management. And what you're not realizing is that there's an underlying abuse and there's an underlying trauma trigger. And all of that, as Dr. Tuning's pointing out, is in the brain. It's in the memory of the brain. And so when we are able to find out, you know, A, about the abuse, and then B, to some extent, about the trauma triggers by referring them for appropriate treatment, you know, we're not just dealing with the anger management. She does need to learn about appropriate behavior, you know, in a school setting and not punching another student or whatever happened in the class. But none of that is going to work if we don't treat the trauma. It's going to come back. There's going to be another trigger. There's going to be more of this manifestation of that trauma. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to say, rather than just a superficial treatment of anger management and you know, trying to tell a 12-year-old to control their anger, we're trying to refer them to an appropriate specialist who can identify that trauma and do the work that needs to be done to remove that trigger, if that's the appropriate phrase, Dr. Tuning. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, the treatment is to then heal that trauma so the trigger is no longer there.
Yeah, and there are several different triggers. An action by someone can flip a trigger. A smell can flip a trigger. You can think of a female that was raped by a person that was intoxicated that had a certain smell to that liquor or whatever it was. Down the road, that smell will still be there, and that will set off your trauma memory. Then the adrenaline flows and stuff like that. And most of the people that are under the control of the base of the brain and in that trauma frame of mind really aren't going to be able to talk logically or work issues out or resolve stuff. You have to get that adrenaline out of the brain so that the brain is functioning normal. So a lot of couples where one of the participants or one of the spouses has had childhood trauma, they're sensitive to touch, sometimes sensitive to words, sensitive to smell, sensitive to high frequencies and stuff like that. And the other spouse may not realize that, and they may unconsciously be talking in a rough voice, not meaning any harm, but that low frequency coming out of a man's voice can certainly kick off memory inside a female. And I've had males to say, when my wife's pitch or volume gets up in a high frequency range, that just creates rage in me. And those are little flags, little triggers that were developed back into the childhood stages.
And so what we're trying to do, Shelley, is to get into the community, say, I mean, in that example, if the trauma is being manifested in a classroom, we're trying to get with the school system, to teachers, to SROs, the school resource officers, to folks in the school system to be able to identify that. Because if I'm a teacher and I'm doing that PowerPoint and all I say is, you know, hey, guys, settle down in the back of the classroom, and a child flips out like that, if I bring a level one redirection and she brings me a level 10 explosive, you know, emotion, we're trying to get teachers to recognize and law enforcement, all sorts of folks that would interact with this girl is rather than looking at her and saying, what is wrong with you? We should be asking, what happened to you? And don't get me wrong, I mean, the behavior, the anger, if she's hit someone, whatever she's done in class, that has to be addressed. I mean, there is punishment for that. We do deal with that. But if we can ask what happened to you, if that then triggers for the adults, if that moves the adults to make a referral for treatment, hopefully, maybe even before it gets to the court system. If it can be referred for treatment to get that child some healing, you're really addressing that underlying problem. So a lot of it is training in the community so that people can identify that trauma rather than just looking at a kid and thinking she's bad or evil or somehow just twisted and we want to kick her out of the school system.
Mm. Yeah, because our first reaction might be, why did you do that? And yeah. The child is not going to know probably that that's a trigger and why it's a trigger. I mean, adults even have difficulty identifying triggers and exactly where they came from and exactly how they impact them. So the child, of course, is going to say, I don't know. And then you're just getting nowhere.
No, as I appreciate it from the experts, I mean, the bottom line, literally, there's no blood flow to the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe where you're weighing the pros and cons of your actions is not active at that point. If you're in this kind of fight or flight mode, the blood flow is to your brainstem, as Dr. Chunin was saying. And so you're in fight or flight mode. Your heart rate is going, your respirations are going, your adrenaline is pumping, and you're not really thinking as clearly.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to add is Clay Walker and Dr. Meredith Nelson are two ACE experts, and Emmy, and I want Clay Walker to talk about this a little more. We do have an excellent survey tool out there. It's called the ACE Survey. There's been a lot of work on this. A big population was studied, and we have found some indicators there that if the child answers questions a certain way, that gives us a pretty good idea that there's trauma sitting there. And, of course, the more trauma events you have, the worse it gets. But there is a simple survey. We just have to understand it. We have to validate it with a person, and that can give us a big, big clue that trauma is sitting there. And Clay Walker and Meredith Nelson are help educating the state and up here in this area, and I want him to talk a little more about that because I think that ACE survey is one of the best tools a therapist can pick up.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate in juvenile court. The Office of Behavioral Health, the Department of Health and Hospitals, brought it's called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. It's essentially a program where we're able to train our staff, help to train the school system, law enforcement, different folks about childhood trauma. And it really is, it's for lay people to simply be able to identify that trauma. You know, we're not asking teachers to be experts in treatment. They're there to make the referral. I mean, it's the same for a probation officer, not necessarily experts in treatment, but identify the trauma and make the referral. And so it's a pretty simple program. It's about a 2-hour presentation. And we've, I think, probably more than 2,000 people or so in the Shreveport-Bossier area have been trained in it already. We're working pretty closely, as I said, with the school system and other folks to try to get that information out there to the extent possible. We just want to get children that have suffered that kind of trauma funneled as quickly and as directly as we can to appropriate treatment. If we're punishing a kid, I mean, if a kid can't read in class and so he gets into fights when he gets teased, it's one thing to teach him, you know, not to hit another kid, but probably the best thing we can do is teach him how to read. And that's gonna put a stop to it. So it's a similar thing with trauma. If we can identify the trauma and get that referral, We are helping that kid. We're reducing future victims. You know, you're disrupting fewer classrooms. That's the kind of, I guess, holistic approach that we're going for.
Right. And kind of the bad news about high scores in that ACE survey, the higher scores you have, unfortunately, are also directing our attention to that it's wear and tear on the body when all this trauma comes in there. And actually, you're going to tick off your life is going to be shorter as a result of higher scores. So that's another reason, once we see scores at a certain level, we've got to get that treatment. So then your life will be a lot longer than if you sit and get no treatment whatsoever. So this survey that was developed for a weight loss program just means so much to each individual. And I think I give it to all my adults that come into my clinic just to determine if they did have that childhood trauma. And it takes a good 2 minutes for them to fill out that survey, and it just means a ton of information. And once we know it's there, that tells us where we need to go and what we need to do. And it's just better for the health of the individual to get treatment for that trauma when the ACE says it looks like it's there. We take that that data and then go diagnose, validate it, and then start the treatment.
So if someone wanted more information on the ACE, how would they go about getting that?
Yeah, the easy way to do that, just contacting me at juvenile court. The number there is 226-6500. If you contact juvenile court and ask for anything about the ACE training, you can ask to speak with me there at juvenile court. I think we have now roughly 28 people in our Shreveport-Bossier community that are trained to give that presentation. Dr. Matthew Mitchell with the school system is one. Laura Alderman at Step Forward with the Community Foundation. There's a lot of folks in the community that have that training. And we can bring it anywhere. We've done the training, I think, for four people at a library and for 300 people at BPSI. Anyone that needs it, but you're talking about, it's really anyone. I mean, it's teachers, law enforcement, parents, clergy, people in the church system. It's going to help you understand trauma, help you identify it, and then to some extent get you connected to this community where you can make those referrals. If you're dealing with someone in a congregation, if you're dealing with a student in a class, if you're dealing with a family member that's got this kind of trauma history, getting involved with the ACEs, you'll learn about it, but then you can also make those connections.
Yeah, I think if we could get that into some of the child care development centers also with the providers there to give them some information on that to determine if they want to fill out a survey on a child so that they can quickly probably understand a lot of the issues. Yes, this child seems to be at a high risk, then refer that person in quickly to your mental health programs and things like that so that we can minimize one child's behavior. That just means a lot of other children inside the class won't be distracted by one child that we can eventually correct and get better. So it's good information. Anyone can pick it up and fill it out. Each individual, if you think there's an issue with yourself, you can certainly go online and Google the ACE survey, and it's a 10-question test, and it can certainly give you some quick information. But there are other questions that your healthcare providers, mental health care providers, that can ask that also tell you a lot about trauma in the childhood, such as the word, have you ever been bullied? Well, if you answer a yes to that, that needs to be validated, and that can also by itself and start your trauma memory problem. So it's just an excellent tool. Clay Walker and Dr. Nelson are doing good work with it. The state of Louisiana, I think, has adopted it, and it gets a lot of information out real quick, and I would hope that all the therapists in town get a hold of that survey so it can help them as they diagnose their clients, and then they can begin to understand, oops, this looks like trauma, so let's go investigate trauma and let's deal with trauma to see if it's kicking off these behaviors.
Dr. Tuning, we have a listener question for you. So someone goes into fight or flight response and the adrenaline is pumping. How how does that get stopped? How would someone stop that?
Well, if you're in that emergency mode, it's probably not going to stop until you get to a safe place. Then you're still going to have a heavy heartbeat and a lot of breathing. There are some techniques that we can certainly train people out of the mental health profession, the deep breathing exercises. There's a new program called tapping. That's a layman's word for emotional freedom technique. It's kind of like acupuncture and acupressure. Those techniques can be utilized by any individual. You can Google those, and there are all kind of YouTube videos on those. But you can go through some deep breathing exercises, and just by taking deep breathing exercises, kind of like a 4-second inhale, a 7-second hold the breath, and an 8-second exhale, that forces the muscles to relax. And when the muscles relax, the adrenaline begins to flow out of them. So the body can send off adrenaline, and also the mind and the body can cause that adrenaline to retreat. Once you master the deep breathing and the tapping, things like yoga, where it's mind control over the body, you can get that adrenaline and that trauma out pretty quick, and the sooner the better.
So we have a couple of minutes left. If y'all wouldn't mind, services that are available, any suggestions, and also if y'all would both give your contact information one more time, that would be great.
Okay, I'm Dudley Tuning. The number to reach the PTSD TBI Counseling Center is 318-226-4290.
And I'm Clay Walker. I work at Juvenile Court, so just reaching me there at the north end of Erie Drive. The number is 226-6500. We also have a list of several different therapists, mental health outfits in town that provide counseling appropriate for trauma. So I have a lot of that contact information. Happy to share that as well.
So whether this is a treatment provider, or a teacher, or someone who is wanting treatment themselves, they could reach out and y'all could steer them in the right direction, at least give them some direction.
You bet. That's why we're here tonight.
Yeah, happy to.
Great. Any other closing final words? Any other suggestions or thoughts or anything?
I would think if couples or families are getting into a lot of arguments, usually those arguments are based maybe in trauma. So if you think we're arguing too much, and that's easy to recognize, that may be an indication that there's some trauma back there in the background that's creating communication skills that just aren't functional. So if you want to check into that and check into getting more information about that, most of your therapists can handle that. If you even think it's close to trauma, you would want to call those offices and ask those people if they have trauma training. Things like prolonged exposure therapy, EMDR therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy are some of the therapy intervention techniques that work real well with single event trauma. And unfortunately, they don't work so well with that complex trauma.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dudley Tuning and Mr. Clay Walker, for joining us this evening and talking about trauma. Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance being provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Sheila Lawrence. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening, and have a good evening.